Blog Talk Radio.
The Egg.
Welcome, Cal. Cal, continue to sing your songs. I hope you're selling your music. And you always take us out of here with our disappearing act. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining the Care to Read Room. We're still featuring Knowledge is Power. Once again, welcome to the Care to Read Room. I am your host for the evening, Omi Inka, your advocate, the one you need, and your advisor, the one you want. Welcome once again. Ladies and gentlemen, our last feature show was a bit of a technical disaster. For whatever reason, we were having trouble with our headset as well as with the microphone, cutting in and out. Very important topic, however, And I want you to go back out and listen to that show. Nevertheless, the first part is rather muffled and voices have been taken out. Nevertheless, I want you to listen to that show. Very important show. Hello again to those friends out there who've been joining me on a regular basis and following me on Twitter. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for following me, and thank you for listening in. And for those newcomers, we want to welcome you and say Habari Gani. You're certainly welcome here today. Now, we have a feature show for you focusing in on the right to work. And do we have the right to work? And who are the workers out there that are working? And if they decide to work after retirement, do they have the right to do that? And what rights do you have on your job? And is your job a unionized job? And what rights do you have once you pay your dues for the union rep to offer you? Now, we're going to be talking to a retired young lady who has worked for over 7 years in one of our blue-collar establishments. And we're going to be featuring her as one of our experts this evening. She's going to be answering questions about the right to work and how her union assisted her on the job. And she's going to be talking to us about working in a field that is not customarily for a female to work in. She worked in the inland steel mill in the coal plant department, which is normally a capacity for males. Nevertheless, here in the state of Indiana, the steel mills were very, very thriving institutes, and men and women worked side by side in different capacities. Did she have the right to work in a mill with a man? Stay tuned. We're going to see what she has to say on the topic. Come on and get on this train so we can go down to the coal plant and we can solicit for those blue-collar workers, and they can get on the knowledge train. Come on down here, BJ. We're ready. I got my fans. Can you take us down to the coal plant? Come on. Miss Harvey, get on board. We're going down to the coal plant right now. And we're going to interview some of those workers right on the field, those train workers and coal plant workers. We know knowledge is power. They need to know about the right of their union. Do they have the right to work alongside a male, a woman in the coal plant? Come on, get on the knowledge train. Come on, ladies and gentlemen, why don't you join us and get on the knowledge train? We have been on this knowledge kick for approximately almost a month now, and we're not going to stop until we cover all aspects of your rights, your pro se rights, how to service yourself as an independent pro se candidate. Now, we're talking about employee rights. This is a topic that mothers and fathers, you want to get around and take a seat in my living room. Now, can I come into your den? I want to get up close and personal. Some of you right now are experiencing all kinds of problems with your employment. And some of you are laid off and on callback and don't know when they're going to call you. Now, have any of you ever went to work after you came off of medical leave and said you were ready to go back to work after being off on a medical leave for maybe 6 months? And you walk in bringing your letters from the doctor, because you must have a doctor's slip in order to report back to work if you've been out for more than 4 days. Most of you should know that. If you haven't, you need to get out your handbook for personnel and resource and referral so you understand your rights and the rules. So you come back to work. You inquire about your specific job and whether or not you'll be placed in your prior job. Maybe Mr. Human Resource will tell you your job has been taken and there is not another job like the one you had. Now, do you have the right to request the same pay scale with preferably the same job type? Look at your handbook. Find out if that corporation is obligated to hire you back at the same rate and preferably for the same job. You need to be reading your handbook. If you haven't, call your union rep. Everybody has one in their unit. When you call that unit rep, ask the unit rep to sit down with you and to decipherly tell you what your rights are about returning to work. Some of you may find out that you don't have a union and there are no set rights and you are baffled about what rights you have. Then go to your human resource department and talk to them specifically about your problem. Now, unions are in a turmoil fight right now up in Madison, Wisconsin, and they have overturned the right to have unionized representation. And in some places, it's going to be illegal to solicit for a union. Now, while we still have unions, we have got to take advantage of what they have to offer, paying our union dues, being involved with soliciting and lobbying. Now, here we are in the quote plant. A young lady comes back to work, gives her permission slip to return to work from her doctor. Her job has now been taken. At the same time, she wants to go back to work. She looks at the human resource man and says, "I'm ready to go back to work." He tells her that I have all these other applicants to place that are coming off leave. You're going to have to go on the surplus list and we'll call you because your seniority does not exceed the seniority of the people we just called back. Now, he told her right. She may not have the opportunity to bump someone because she has less seniority. So what will she have to do? Go on the surplus list. In the meantime, how does she draw her severance pay? She goes right out and applies for unemployment. She's now eligible. There lies the problem, ladies and gentlemen, because she has to prove that she was surplus and that she didn't quit her job and had no reason to be terminated or she left the job without a cause. Now, I want to go into blue-collar workers and women working in blue-collar workers. Here in Gary, Indiana, there are a number of women that work side by side, blue collar workers in the steel mill. We're going to be interviewing a young lady who worked for 7 years in the steel mill and the coal plant. And she did a number of different jobs during that 7 years. And we're going to talk to her about her right to work in that capacity. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, and listen to Nettie's teacher. We'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Stay tuned. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be doing our talking cure. And if you don't mind, why don't you stand to your feet? We're going on over to the talking cure area. And we're going to light a candle to my mother spirit. And we say Ashe. We're going to light a candle to our father spirit. And I say Ashe. I pour libation and a glass of water for my father's spirit, and I say, Ashe. I pour libation and a glass of water to my mother's spirit, Ashe. Ladies and gentlemen, periodically take time out of your schedule, synchronizing your vital sign, taking deep breaths, putting yourself into a meditating stage, thinking back of when your ancestors traveled through the Middle Passage and learning about the ones that didn't make it through. Some of them may still be in the lagoon passing through. We say to those who are still struggling to get through the Middle Passage, keep trying and striving, my brother and sister. You will get through. And we provide water for you to quench your thirst. We have a candle to light your way. We ask that you will reconnect with your various families and reconnect and take your proper places, allowing us to stand on your shoulders. We thank you, ancestors, that we know you're the sum total of why we came, and that as we prepare our children, we tell them that even yet in the loins, that these children will be blessed because of the work that our ancestors have done. We call on Harriet Tubman. We call on Carter G. Woodson. We call on the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we call on Malcolm X, Martin Coretta. We call on Harriet. And we ask these great warriors to allow us to draw from their experience, because we know at one time the civil rights movement was to open up doors to allow us to have jobs that we could not have in the past. And the civil rights movement opened up Sleepy Par Hollow so that those men could work on the railroad. And we know that the Langston Hughes and the writers, that Zora Neale Hurston opened up doors for us to write and journal and create great authors. We thank you, ancestors, that you have opened the doors and knocked down the door frame so we can come forward and have the ability to take employment by the hand and open the door to the opportunities for men and women to work side by side in various blue-collar jobs. And today, ancestors, you can be proud that there are women working in all sorts of fields and women having the opportunity to fly into space and be able to take on technical jobs that we haven't had in the past. We thank you, ancestors, because it's through the sweat of your brows and the hard work that you have made it possible. Ladies and gentlemen, there are women working in all capacities of employment, but yet racism still prevails. That's right. Racism still prevails. And in working in a predominantly male capacity can be a rather difficult one, and I know it firsthand. And we're going to talk about that. As a scheduler planner, I worked in a capacity with predominantly males and saw the discrimination that exists and had to work with it every day. Nevertheless, I did have a right to be employed, and I had to learn what my rights were and stay very closely rooted to the handbook and talking to my union rep. Now, as a teacher working in the profession for the many years I did, I found that you have to become accustomed to the rights that you have in your union book in order for you to cite any inadequacy. Now, we're going to be talking to our guest today. Her name is Matt Haar. She has worked in the Inland Steel Mill for over 7 years in a male capacity. She's going to tell us a little bit about her struggle and what she overcame in order to make it better for the women to come. So I'm going to bring Matt Harv on. Matt Harv is retired now, and she is 77 years old, but yet living to talk about her experience and her right to work. We're going to bring Matt Harv right in the atmosphere. Matt Harv is from Gary, Indiana, a native by way of Mississippi. She has a lot of experience as well in social work. Stay tuned. Here is Matt Haar. Matt Haar, hello. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Just great. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. And we are going to ask you a few questions about working in a coal plant at the steel mill. What was it like?
Well, it was quite an experience, I tell you, because working in steel mill is very difficult for working someplace else. Even though you have a union representative, you still had to be very careful because it was dangerous. And not only that, I was a tractor driver there. I would have to go and pick up the big coils of steel on the tractor, bring them back, bring the coils of steel back, and sit them in the location where they can be put on its rest. And that was my job, to get on that tractor, go after the big coils of steel has been rolled up, go get that coil of steel, bring it back, put it in the track where they can pick it up. And that was my job. And you know what? It was a job, because driving a big tractor was an experience. Had I not known how to drive a car, I would have never known how to drive a tractor in the steel mill. And working in the steel mill was quite an experience, because you had to be careful. You had to watch everything you do. And not only that, you had to wear a helmet. You had to be protected. You had to dress protected, as well as watch out for everything. And you had to be aware of what you was doing. And that, in that area where I worked, it was a little bit safer than what it was years and years ago, they say. But we had to be very, very careful, because, like I say, I drove the tractor around the mill. You had to go pick up the coils of steel, bring them back, put them in tracks for it to be picked up. And it wasn't easy. And those coils of steel sometimes were way more than the tractor. And it was very difficult to pick them up at times.
Mrs. Harvey, can you tell me, were you also required to do the same thing that the males were required to do, or did they have a separate set of job responsibilities for the women?
No, as you worked there equally, you conducted it equal. You had to do the same thing, the same job as the men did. The men drove the tractors, they picked up the coils, they rolled the coils off, and you had to do likewise.
Now, were the men very pleased with working with you, and did they partner very well, or did you find yourself having a difficult time working with these men, and was there any partiality shown to you?
Well, at first, I was a little nervous, but the men that we worked with, that I worked with, and other ladies worked with, were very helpful. Now, our foreman was Mr. Bunny Harris. He passed on a few days ago. He was the best foreman anybody could ever have, because he trained us, he taught us, he showed us, and he was proud of what we were doing, because he trained us very well. and to help us to learn our job, he was right there. He was one of the best foremen out there in Inland Steel in my department where I worked.
And, you know, Mrs. Harvey, that's very awesome thing to say about an instructor who has trained you and put you in a job and feels like it's necessary for him to reinforce and support you. Now, what I'd like to know is, do you feel that there was any time during you were on that job where you had discrepancy on hourly pay, time and a half? Were you treated any differently when you went into the human resource department, to inquire about your pay or to inquire anything about your job? And were you given the opportunity to promote from within and apply for jobs within that department?
Because women were working in that, was the first time that women were working in that department. And if we went in, some of the men were very helpful, and some of them were very distracted enough that they didn't want us to come and work in that department. And we had a time, because it seemed like the men that didn't want us, they just looked like overlooked us. But the one that didn't mind, they helped us and showed us and helped us along the way on the job. And those were the men that we always looked up to. But the other men, there was always men there who didn't want us, they was critical of us, what our job we was doing and everything. So it was difficult. We had to learn the hard way.
So you had double standard, and you had to work extremely harder than the men that didn't want you there to prove that you were capable of holding a job now, I would suppose.
Yes, by all means, we had to show them that we could do the job. And as we worked harder to show them we could do the job, we still had some men who didn't want us there in the first place. You know, we had to work out to show them that we could do the job, and we were just as good as they were on the job.
Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to let the band take a break, and we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Mrs. Harvey, take five. We'll be right back. Gentlemen, we're back in the atmosphere. I want to call your attention to that number. Why don't you call in and talk with Mrs. Harvey? Lock your dial in at 646-478-0270. Those of you who are retirees and are prior steel mill workers, call in and pose your question for Mrs. Harvey of 7 years in the coal plant, in the steel mill, Inland Steel Mill in East Chicago, Indiana. Yes, there are many of you steel mills out there in Ohio, all over the place, because blue-collar workers were making very good money during this time. I can remember when the city was very hot, people from all over relocating to Gary, Indiana, for the blue-collar steel mill jobs. Now, here you have a woman who's not supporting her family and working in a capacity, and many men being somewhat distraught, giving these women a hard time. what were their regulations and what did the handbook say on discrimination by other employees? And did Human Resources support you in your efforts to have rights to be in those coal plants? Or did Human Resources go right along with the men and further to discriminate? We'll be talking to Ms. Harvey, so stay tuned. Mrs. Harvey, we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere.
Cadman presents the African American Audio Experience, including Black Boy by Richard Wright, A Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry, selections from the Nikki Giovanni Poetry Collection, selections from the Tall Tales chapter of Every Tongue Got to Confess by Zora Neale Hurston, three poems by Gwendolyn Brooks, and selections from Langston Hughes Reads.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, this is a Creative Read Room. I am your host. I am your empress. I'm also your advisor and your advocate. I'm here to serve you. Now, can I talk to you? We're talking about the right to work. What do I mean when I say the right to work? Every citizen has a right to work. Therefore, in a coalition, jobs need to be created from a vast multitude of clerical jobs all the way to blue-collar jobs. It is honorable work, and even disabled candidates have a right to work. And there's a big push for disabled workers to find a way to have self-worth. Work makes you inalienable, able to have self-worth. And it is an obligation of society to create those opportunities where you can go and exert energy. So what is work? Is it exerting energy and positive energy at that? And I want to say, for those of you who've been trained to be in the office and you're working at these blue-collar establishments, you have access to the handbooks. Handbooks are mandatory when you come into work. You have to sign off that you've had an orientation about your handbook and that you received it. Don't take it lightly. Once you get your handbook, hold on to it and read the regulation. The unions usually have union books. If you want to bring a grievance, you must know the proper way. You just can't go skipping into glory saying, "I don't like how those men treat me in that coal plant. I think something ought to be done about it." No. You got to have a formality, and there has to be a procedure of how you follow the chain of command. And the form has to be written in a certain manner in order to bring a grievance. You just can't say, "I'm grieving the way I'm treated," without following the channels of command. Now, for those of you who may be working in clerical jobs, there are a number of things going on now, different shifts. Employees are able to select their shift. They may be on summer hours, which means they can come in later as long as they put their 8 hours in. Then you have in the nursing profession, where some of the medical workers can work 3 days on at 10-hour shifts and 4 days off and still be full-time. Then you also have job sharing, where someone takes 1 8-hour job and shares it with two people, where they use a cycle of 4 hours in cycles so that they can get that part-time job in and take 8 hours and split it up. Now, we've got to be creative in how we create our jobs. Simply because of the fact that our jobs are going overseas and we don't have access to it. Now, I'm going to bring Mrs. Harvey back on in the atmosphere, and we're going to talk about pay scales. We're going to talk about discrepancies in promotions for women. We're going to also talk about the history of women not being able to work in capacities such as railroads. We know under Sleepy Par Hollow, the majority of those porters were females. Now that things have changed, you will see women going up in space, becoming astronauts. You will see like Mae Jemison being on NASA, working in space. You will also see women in capacity such as running for the legislature, running for Secretary of State, in all sorts of capacities. So during the women's suffrage movement, women didn't have much rights. And that was during a time when African American was struggling just to have their right to be free. Now that things have changed, what is happening? Are women able to hit the glass ceiling? Do you find more African American vice presidents? And where do they go when they have discrepancies about an all-male profession being the VP? How do they make their complaint? And what are some of the complaints? Let's go back to Ms. Harvey. Ms. Harvey, you're in the atmosphere. Tell us some of the complaints that women have placed while working in the inland steel mill.
Well, one of the things that I do remember is that some of the men that were very angry with some of us because we were taking on the lightweight job that they would have had, and they were angry because of that. And this is one of the reasons why when women, you have your union rep to help you to prolong and carry on. But by the same token, our boss, Mr. Money Harris, he's gone on now, but he always made sure that we were treated equally as everybody else. Nobody could, he did not allow anybody to override us or to put us down or anything. We were treated equally along with the men. And the men that we worked with, most of the men that we worked with, not all of them, were very respectful of us as ladies. But we had some who really didn't want to tolerate us at all because they felt that we was taking away their lightweight jobs, which we wasn't, because Mr. Harris, our boss, saw that everybody was treated equally. He didn't put no more on us women that he did. I mean, no more on the women that he did on the men, and the men no more on the women. He treated us all equally. And we, as women, stood up. It was four of us women in that department on my ship. We had to stand up together and let those men know that we were there to do a job, and they wasn't going to just push us around because we had a union rep just like they did.
Mrs. Harvey, so you didn't have a lot of complaints. You had a good boss, and the boss. So you didn't have any complaints. You had a good boss, and the boss helped you. And as long as you were in that environment, you were safe. What happened to the women that went out and took promotions? Were they equally represented and being welcomed?
The ones that I know was, because Mr. Harris, Mr. Money Harris, he saw to that.
Okay.
He saw to that.
When Mr. Harris wasn't present and your employees transferred out of his department, did you hear about women having any qualms or discrimination of not being accepted once they went to those other departments?
You heard a lot about that. The women had to deal with that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Now, you're working in a blue-collar capacity. I know you've worked for many years, and you've worked in other capacities such as social work. Tell us a little bit about that, and what were some of your discrepancies and problems that you experienced in the school system?
Well, I certainly have experienced jealousy between workers there, where in the school system that was mostly all women working, not necessarily the men working in the social field.
Mm-hmm.
And there was women working there, and we had we also had a union rep right there. But the problem working in the social field like that was between women. There wasn't men, a lot of men. There were some men there, but maybe one that we didn't have to go up against.
In essence, you're telling me that these were a different set of problems with working with all women. Now, I know for a fact that there are indicative problems to women that are different from men, and some of the problems in the school system that you'll find is jealousy, and it can stop the flow of good work and good ethics. So what were some of the ethics that were practiced in the school system that were different from what you had in the coal plant?
Well, the difference that we had in our school system was altogether different from the coal plant, because we women were mostly all women in the school system, and we had to dress the part as well. But in the steel mill, there was men and women there, and we didn't have to go up against the same opposition we did when we were working in the school system as we did in the steel mill.
I see. Now, Mrs. Harvey, some of the things that women didn't get a chance to do is have a 5-year plan, and someone work up a plan in human resource and gave them an idea of where they could see themselves in 5 years. Generally, you see that a lot in professional jobs where they must have a plan of advancement on file. Now, this being a new technique and procedure for human resource or clerical workers, what was the plan that you were offered as a blue-collar worker, and did you have any 5-year plan outlined for you in the blue-collar capacity?
No, I didn't, because the only plan I had for working in the school system was to go to a higher paying job. And as I worked from one job to the next, I did reach that scale to higher job with higher pay. And so it was later on that we had we met with our boss. Met with our boss, and he helped us along the way in many days that he was there for us. Mr. Harris was a wonderful boss, and may he rest in peace, because he helped the many ladies as they came to this job, being their first job in the steel mill. He was always there to help us, to guide us and show and give us a sense of direction. And you know, there was one thing that we learned from Mr. Harris, that unity is always something we had to learn to do. And you know, as we went from, we had to go from day work to afternoon work, night work. And as we changed shifts, there was different individuals there. And there was more men on the night shift there than there were women. And the men on the night shift there seemed like they would help us a little bit more and give us, help us with a sense of direction on the job and help us to learn about the job and show us. And they were very helpful to us there.
That you actually had a great experience that some women don't talk about. They talk about other types of problems that have prevailed on the workforce. Now, I know that the Inland Steel has been noted for being a very dangerous place to work, and there are all kinds of caustic asbestos that people have been exposed to, and I've even known some people to expire while on the job who didn't make it out. Now, there are all kinds of safety regulations and people looking over their shoulder to help one another. What kind of safety regulations and partnering, and did the men help you equally so that you could have safety around you while on the job?
On the night shift, the men would always there to help us and give us a sense of direction. And you would find women working the day shift with men who was helpful. And our boss, Mr. Harris, was always there to give us a sense of direction safely. He always talked to us about safety. He always, with that first thing we came on in the morning time on day shift, he would have a little talk with us, teaching us and showing us and telling us about safety. And that helped us a lot. And then and when he worked through the 11th shift, he would also do the same thing all over again. And we were proud of him because he was a special person to us.
Mrs. Harvey, we're going to change gears a little bit. We're going to talk about preparing women for employment and what type of programs that companies can offer to cross-train women, and how do you get the assessment to know what your gifts and strengths are, and was this plant the type of company that was up and coming that offered you clerical courses, computer courses, so that you could cross-train? Was that available in the plant?
That was available, not in the plant. At that time, no, that was not available. You had to get your own training.
So you never had any computer training while on this job?
No, I didn't. I never had any. And I didn't even know they offered computer training unless you was hired in that capacity.
I see. Now, would you say that working in the clerical position was a lot easier opposed to working in a factory setting?
Well, that all depends on the individual, because there's a lot of people who would rather work in the clerical field than to work in the factory.
And would you think that the company wanted to train you or saw skills in you that he could utilize so that he wouldn't have to go to the outside, but they would mold their workers so they can hire from within? Were there more promotions from within, or did they go out to the outside to recruit?
Outside recruiting than they did inside. I really think so. They did a lot of recruiting from inside to different capacities, but they did a lot of outside recruiting a lot. They hired a lot of people from the outside to come in to our department.
Now, Mrs. Harvey, were the job salary equal to the men opposed to the women, or were they indifferent, Jay?
Hired. Your salary, you start at a certain salary, and then after you work, your salary goes up.
Was it comparable to the men, Or were you slightly given less money?
I think we was given a little bit less as when we first got hired. And after we got hired and worked for a while, our salary was increased.
Mrs. Harvey, do you think you have the right to work? And what gives you the right to work? Do you think that you should be given that right to work when you're in the birthing stage of your life? Or should you be home having children? Or do you have that right to work just like men do?
An individual. And I think you should have a right. If you want to work, you should work. And if you don't want to work, then you don't have to work. I think you have a right, and it's up to you to make that come through to yourself.
I see. Now, I worked in a lot of job capacities myself. And being that when I was in the childbearing stage, I clinged to those positions that would allow me to work swing shifts, preferably 3 to 11. I found that mothers have to take all kinds of hour shifts in order to maintain their babysitting capacity. Now, do you think a mother should work during the first 3 months of a child's life, or should she be home gearing that child?
I think that is an individual process. If the mother thinks she should work, I think that's left up to the mother. I think that if she wants to work, I think she should be given that right to work.
We're going to go to station identification. So we'll be right back in the air with King JB. Take us home. I'm going to get my fair king. I want to get on that train. All right, we're going to get that knowledge because we know knowledge is power. That's right. Knowledge is power. Come on, get us on down the road. Get your back. Back ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and welcome back to the Care to Read Room. We're so glad that you decided to join us. Mothers and fathers, gather around the room. This is a show that's been especially created for you. We're talking about the right to work. Do we have the right to work? And when do women need to take a break to have childbearing? Is it the first 5 years of their life? Should they be home with their infants from birth to 6 months, rearing those children, preferably working night shifts? Or should they be out there fighting and integrating for the jobs and bidding for the same jobs of a man? Some men get angry when they find out they're in competition with a woman who doesn't need to feed her family and competing for the same job that a man wants that has to feed his family. Sometimes it can get rather hairy, and you can find competition on the job, preferably in your clerical positions, administrative position. We're going to change the shift. We're going to go to those corporate offices and talk about the competition that exists between men and women in the office. Let's talk about it, people. Call in. If you're an administrator and you're having a difficult time and you want to work, but you're competing constantly with someone that has less experience than you, and because they have government contracts, they have to hire a minority. And are you a minority? And what makes government contracts draw so many minorities? Now, we're going to talk about those clerical jobs. So, you're working for Motorola. You have scheduler, planners, physician working out in the plant, and you are an administrator, preferably making administrative salary. Here's the men that are working with you in this capacity as engineers, but you're holding down an administrative job just like them. Do they have the right to treat you like a secretary, like a second-class citizen? Do they have the right to give you orders when you're both reporting to the man? And what rights do you have in having your five-year plan projected as a female? You have rights, ladies and gentlemen. In the corporate offices, most human resources are required now to lay out a five-year plan of where they project that you will be in 5 years, whether you're going back to school, completing continuing education, whether you're closing the gap and obtaining that degree or advancing yourself to a master's degree. You should have a five-year plan laid out, regardless if you are female or not. Now, what are some of the complications that we run into when there is a director's position available? Do we oftentimes think that a male is more suited for that position because he is more apt to lead better? Is woman more suited to become a manager and a facilitator to delegate orders? 9 times out of 10, this is from the Chronicles of Garth. Now, this is coming from Garth. I think more than likely, most women are more prepared to be a manager and facilitate the affairs in the home, therefore making her a better equipped manager by nature. This is coming from the Chronicles of Garth. Nowhere else, ladies and gentlemen. Don't get angry. Please understand, as a woman that has been married over 33 years and developing a director in my home, I was the force behind the so-called power. Women that are married to directors are forced behind these men, and they are the one that must be given credit to balance that man and to make sure that that man is involved in the capacity of running a corporate office. So you have a woman candidate who wants the director slot at Honeywell, and you have a male that also thinks he should get that position by virtue of the fact that he has a MBA. And she has one too. So what? Now, how do you make the decision? And when you decide to choose the female and you usher her in her flowers, and this man that's waiting to hear whether or not he got the job, once he sees the flowers, he also sees the writing on the wall. He didn't get the position. Now he has to train her to be a director or to assist her. Now he is promoted to her job. But at the same time, they're using that man to train her. 9 times out of 10, she's a double minority. And they got government contracts, and they need to keep pumping it up. Woo, woo, woo. We got 2 government contracts and a black woman who is the director over the facility. So, have they met the criteria to keep that government money? Oh, yes, they have. They got it in the bag. Now they look good and they smell good to some vendor who's looking to give government contracts. Now, wait a minute, man. Don't chance to advance. Your time is coming. Now, do you jump up and quit and say, I'm out of here, man? That was supposed to be my job. If you're not too foolish, you take a deep breath. Now, breathe with me. Breathing in and out. I'll vitalize my spiritual system with yours. Take a break. Take a deep break. You don't want to jump up and quit. You want to stay in that position. And if you have to, train that woman. There'll be another director spot. And don't think that your sole reason for getting an MBA was to make it to the director. You get another chance. Don't walk out of that company. You got 18 years. Man, your time will be up more than what you know. Those 25 years will roll around real fast. But if you're too anxious and you jump up and quit, you leave with 18 years, not enough to get your full pension. And you say, I'm out of here, man. And you really are out of here. You've lost a great portion of your pension. With a company giving you a 401k, you can buy stock, and you have a cafeteria plan for your medical plan with Blue Cross Blue Shield. At the same time, you have all sorts of benefits for your family, dental, vision. And you also have the opportunity to go to an amusement park once a year and stay at a resort at their expense. Look at all those benefits. Add them up. They're the same benefits she's getting. And your salary may not differ that much. She just inherited some more responsibility that you didn't get. So you look like the better man to me. You sure smell better to me. And now you can lay back in the cut and wait for your turn. In the meantime, you're shining. And she's still discovering her world every day, walking one day at a time. And you are reflecting and projecting someone who's buffed and shining. Stay in that position. Don't worry. You will get noticed sooner or later, more so sooner than later. Don't jump up and quit because you got to work for a woman. There are many men will use the excuse, I don't have a problem with a woman. And I certainly don't mind working for her. But until they get that opportunity, it's easier said than done. Most men come out with that male chauvinistic attitude. They don't want to work for a woman, and they sure don't want a woman over there. Don't be stupid, man. Take the job. A woman can be fair, and she's thorough. So what it is she do, she's going to do it her best because she's a natural manager. She follows instructions. She attends to details. And she will facilitate and facilitate and facilitate. And she will delegate. It's what is necessary to get the job done. Teamwork. So be fair. Don't overtake her because she's the lesser vessel. Give her a chance. The reason why I feel so strongly about this, because my last husband was a male chauvinistic pig. He didn't believe a woman could do anything as good as him. But I was the mastermind behind his directorship, even to the point where I had to go in the boardroom to act on his behalf. He never said a word when I performed in his place, but time and time again, he indirectly indicated that a woman can't do a man's job. Now, let's go back to our guest to see what she thinks about a woman doing a man's job. Here we go. We're going to bring Mrs. Harvey back in the atmosphere. Mrs. Harvey, do you feel that a woman can do a man's job?
It all depends on what the job is. Women have capacity and the men have capacity. A woman can do a man's job, consider whatever kind of job it is. Because there's some job women can't do that a man can do.
Okay, now we're talking about an administrative jobs, Ms. Harvey. We're talking about being in the boardroom, the blue-collar job.
Of course a woman can do that job. By all means, she can do it. And some women can do a better job on that than a man. But I don't think that a woman can take over and run it like a man. I don't think so.
Okay, Ms. Harvey, let me get in there for 1 minute here. I want to say hello to our listener on the line here.
Hello, listener. You're in the Care to Read room. And if you'd like to say something, you can. But if you're a listener, it's quite all right. Hello. Okay. We'll just let you listen. Now, we're going to go back to Mrs. Harvey, but we will clarify our question. We're talking about we're not talking about blue-collar jobs now. We're shifting the gear. We're talking about professional jobs, women in the boardroom, CEOs, vice president. We're talking about women becoming a director. I prefer to be a director over human resource. Is she born for the position? Is she created for the occasion? Can she handle her management team? Does she know how to assess all of her employees and learn their strengths and their weaknesses? Does she know how to team them up so that they complement each other? Does she understand that a woman's natural capacity is to manage? That is why you find so many men who give everything over to the woman and ask her to delegate and relevate what is significant. And she gets the job done. In other words, she is multitasking. Whereas in some cases, organization can be a problem for the male. Now, I'm not shucking and driving the male. I'm saying when a woman manages her household all day long, 24/7, is what she's doing, is managing personalities, she's managing behaviors, attitudes, careers, and a love affair with her husband. She's managing. Now, is it a good thing to say that women should be seen and not heard? Go in there and have those babies and stay home? Or can she work from the home? I say she can work from the home. If she's at the childbearing stage and the child is young, I suggest she stay home to work with that youngin until he gets of age, at least a 1 year old. In the meantime, the mother must be molding the child, and if she chooses to work, maybe her husband could create a family business or an office in their home. But she must be there to tend to the child until he's of an age that he can help care for himself, walk and talk. Otherwise, that mother may be out making that money, but she's putting it right back into the child care because she's going to have suitable child care. So it's like an oxymoron. You're making the money and throwing it right out the window because you're not benefiting from it, unless she's making an awful lot of money and only paying a small fraction for her child care. Let's go to station identification, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and you're in the atmosphere here in the Care to Read room. Welcome. Lock in that dial at 646-478-0270. And we're talking to our guest here in the atmosphere, Matt Harve. She is a retired worker of the Inland Steel Mill in the coal plant, and she's worked in capacities of social work as well in the school system. Now, we're talking about women that are in executive jobs such as directors of human resource and working in the capacity of working with a man under her. Now, we've been talking about what must a man do in order to humble himself to work under the guidance and direction of a female. Must he hate her? Be a player hater? Do things undermining her? Speak negative in the presence of her? Outsmart her in the boardroom? Try to lure her in the bedroom? Now here we want to stop here. Does he try to get under her clothes and lure her in the bedroom? So he figured if he got in her head that he could manipulate her. It's unethical, unprofessional to even date someone on the job, let alone ask to take them to bed. No, if she is any manager at all, she will not date a male on the job, especially someone who is not her superior, who has a lower rank than her. You must remember,
it all depends upon the male, how he feels about women also, because I know that women are strong-natured people, because I know most women, I remember when my mother was mastering two households, she would take care of her boss's household and his kids, then she'd come back and take care of us and her household, so she mastered two households. And I also feel that a man, if he's over a group of women, all he has to do is follow his job and teach them how to be united together. And then he can bring on the rules, and they will probably follow them better then than ever.
I see. Now, Matt Har, my question is that women are very difficult to manage, and sometimes when we're in a large number, it gets to be very cumbersome because of personality clashes. Now, I have worked with a large group of women in the military, and sometimes it could be devastating in the capacity of working in childcare with women as well. And women have a tendency to think differently than men, but those women that have to be called as a manager have to think a little bit like a male, and thinking that they're not going to bring their personal attitudes into the workplace with them. But you find so many women that want to decipher the personal problems, and men get a little tired of that. They really do, and it plays on a man's nerve and conscience. And some women want to get their way, so they come in with the crying, with the tears, and the whole bit. And the man just wants it over with, so he gives her her way. Now, as a manager, a woman, more women recognize those signs. I think it's more important for a male to understand that if he runs into a problem with this woman who's constantly having conflict after conflict, and it's falling on his sensitive side, and he doesn't know what to do about it, he needs to bring the union in and have a third party mediator so that he doesn't get overtaken and get psyched out, because this woman is bringing him tears. He got to be knowledgeable enough to say, this is way over my head, it's too sensitive, I need the union to come in. Now, does the manager have a right to bring a union rep in as a mediator to somewhat gather facts and assess the situation? Yes, he does. He has a right to do that because he's trying to protect himself and herself from what could potentially happen. Let me go to my guest and get her opinion on that. Matt Harv, do you think that a male manager has a right to bring in a union rep to be present there to make sure protocol is followed?
I feel that he should first sit down with his counterpart and talk to her and try to get an understanding from her, and see if the two of them can come together with an understanding. And then if they can't come together, if they can't recognize on the same attitude, then I think maybe he should bring it in.
Okay. I want to say something. Harassment is very big in the workforce, sexual harassment and harassment. So a large portion of women do play on the fact that they can yell harassment. If you didn't hire their friend and their friend came in and applied for a job, they could yell, It was harassment. And guess what? That woman gets another interview and a chance to become employed. It's a gimmick. Sometimes is a quick way to get your way. So the reason why I said that a male needs a union rep present is because there needs to be a neutral party who has no vested interest, who can assess the situation and see if this woman or male is pulling the wool over his eyes. It can be documented so that he's protected and he follows protocol and he doesn't discriminate against this woman. Now, let's go into these executive jobs. When they're perps, where they travel together, they have an expense account, and they're traveling overseas, and they're doing jobs and work together. Ethics on the job. What is important for a female to do when she's been given an expense account and been given strict orders as to what her expense account should include? And she and other males who she's trying to impress are traveling, and she begins to take this expense account and take advantage of it and doesn't document procedures as to what she spent the money on, and she buys personal things for herself. This could become unethical. At that point, that male can be held hostage if he's telling her that's not right. And if she's over him as a supervisor, she'll say, keep your mouth closed, or else I'll demote you. Now, here's this man in a muzzle, not able to speak the truth and correct her, and afraid that she's going to demote him. When a male or woman go out on a trip for resources, workshops, seminars, symposiums, they ought to conduct themselves in a professional manner. They ought to understand that regulations say that monies cannot be spent on your personal asset unless you have a personal account that you can be reimbursed for. Otherwise, unethical behavior steps in when she blackmails that male, indicating that she has authority over him to usurp authority to promote, to demote him, or fire him. We must use good ethics on the job. We cannot take our steps forward to advancement by using unethical manners and procedures. And we must be able to recognize unethical procedures and call them out, irregardless of whose feelings we hurt. Now, let's go back to the phone line. We have an expert in the room, a 76-year-old retired young lady, and I didn't say old, Matt Harve, who has worked in capacities of blue-collar jobs, also as a social worker. Now, we're going to talk to her a little bit in the other capacities that she's worked in child care. This is an area which was more predominant with women. What were the day-to-day cumbersome problems working around all these women, Matt Harve? Can you tell us?
Well, most of when you're working around a bunch of women, it's either a lot of gossip. If it's not a lot of gossip, it's jealousy, and you have to deal with that. And you also have to deal with them one-on-one individually, because they all have different problems. Some have the same problem, but whatever problem you have, you have to come together, and you women, the women together have to work it out. And if you can bring them together and sit them down and let them know that we are all in the same boat, we have to work this problem out, and they have to work it out. Without bringing in any union representative, work out their problem. Learn to come together in unity and work out their problem.
Matt, we're talking about when you can't work it out. And procedure. Union reps tell you, okay, union reps tell you don't just wait till you think something has reached a boiling point. You must follow procedures. You bring the union rep in day one because you're protecting yourself. It's not that you're trying to work it out. You're protecting yourself because you have someone to record the minutes and somebody there to substantiate what was said. Otherwise, it's your word against the other employing. And that can be a problem because you could be held out as being a discriminative male basher or female basher. So you don't want that. You want a neutral party to be present so your rights are protected. So we found that sometimes we overstep our mean by trying to correct the problem when protocol calls for us to have a mediator present or an arbitrator. Now, union reps are now doing less and less to create an opportunity to hire more union reps. And I had a chance to work with the union reps and support them. And my husband used to also do the union rep work and settling a contract. So I'm very familiar with how it works. However, every system is different. Even like the school district, when you go on strike, there's a lot of issues that the union that has to be ratified, and we have to go strictly by the books. Now, Matt Harv, tell me in the child care arena, what were some of the procedures and rules that had to be followed for child care workers?
Well, in the child care working area, women work together. They work together. They both had the same.
No. Matt Harv, what are some of the regulations? Like, for example, you had a ratio, required ratio of how many children could be in the room based on how many employees were there. And if regulations weren't followed, these employees could go out and talk to administration and make a complaint because they are in an environment that can be dangerous. What were some of the issues?
Almost got all the women together, sit them down, and lecture to them and ask them and told them that we're going to come together as a group. And we came together as a group, and they didn't let one of us go out individually. We worked together, and as we worked together, we developed a relationship. And that relationship made us and brought us together closely, and we worked things out. And it made us better leaders, better child care workers.
Okay, Matt Harm, we know child care workers is a lower food chain, and sometimes they're mistreated, and sometimes they're overworked. We know this. I've worked in the field with as a teacher, and we've seen how some child care workers can be overworked, underworked, at the same time not given benefits. So everything is not always worked out, Matt Harm. I know that, because human nature will not allow for it. And when that happens, we need to have protocol is what we're trying to get at. What are some of the protocol that was used in your establishment in the child care business in order to resolve these problems that were foreseen?
Well, you was brought together with your boss and sit down one-on-one, and you was getting to discuss with you and your boss what was going on, how was you doing it, what was you going to do. And after you discussed it, then we came together as a group again.
Okay, that's hard. I think you don't hear that I'm saying. You had a set of procedures, and you could go up the channel of command. Talk about, what were the channels of command you had to go through before you could go to the personnel department? Who did you have to go through with your complaint?
Go step by step. We had to go through the first knowledge leader, then the next one, and if we had another one to go to, we had to go through all three of them, and then they brought us together. And we sit down and we talked about the situation. We were together. We were.
To do is cover a broad area of employees. We've talked a little bit about the problems that are indicative to the boardroom and executive. Let me change gears here. There are a number of problems that could occur when you have a civil rights law, meaning that you must hire all people and not discriminate. I had the occasion of working with homosexuals at one point that came into the establishment that were hired. and they came under my supervision as a manager. At that point, I could not question their background and whether or not they were screened for homosexuality. I merely had to put them to work and be fair and allow them to have every opportunity that everybody else in that claims department had. And this is when I was working for Blue Cross Blue Shield. However, I noticed the meticulousness in these workers that were homosexuals. They were detail-minded. They were scrupulous about all forms of claims that were not payable. They were timely, continuously with completing their work. They were also a great manager in following through to get the claim errors corrected so they could pay claims. I had no complaint whatsoever. They were some of the top-notch workers of the world, Craig. So I had no complaints. Nevertheless, management did, and they kept questioning what I felt of these three men. And I said, what do you mean? These three men are doing their job. That's why we hired them. I had no desire to bring these men up on any false charges or to terminate them. I was asked to terminate them. I told them I wouldn't, and if it need be, I would exit my job before I did something like that that is not ethical. You're going to come across a lot of positions where you have to take jobs to do unethical things in order to stay up in management. I presented this problem to my team of 16 claim process and told them personally what was going on. I immediately gave those three workers a chance to go and interview for other outside jobs so that they wouldn't fire them without them having employment. I also told my staff that I was going to exit out with those young men, and if they wanted to, they can leave with us, because I thought the staff was unethical and unprofessional, and I couldn't any further take orders for them or work for them. So at that particular point, I came in, gave my resignation, told my workers what I was going to do. They all band together and said, we're walking with you in honor of the respect that we have for these three young men. They are not a force that you should come against them and discriminate. We're going to walk on behalf of discrimination of these homosexuals. So we all walked out with dignity together. And do you know, management called my house all night and asked me to ask those workers to come back to work. I said, we have resigned. It's over. You cannot disrespect or mistreat people because of their decision to become a homosexual. You must be fair if you're a good manager. Now, if you are someone that wants to kiss up to administration and you're going to stab these people in the back when they've been faithful to you and performing their job, you have to use good ethics at that point. Now, you're going to see that periodically throughout the workforce, and you're going to have to turn the other cheek because you must understand they have rights too under the civil rights movement, and you don't have the power or the authority to discriminate against any of those homosexuals, or if they are women that are coming in that are bisexual or what have you. You have no business firing them, dismissing them because of their selection. Not that I'm for homosexual or for being a bisexual. I'm not for any of that, but I'm for civil rights for every man and woman. Therefore, sometimes they will call you out and say you are a homosexual lover. No, I am a lover of righteousness and truth. So you get in these positions, you're raring to go because you got this big salary and they told you that they're going to allow you to do all these great things, but then there's a little stipulations that go with that. And once you find out what the stipulations are, then you find out you cannot work in this establishment. It irks you. It perturbs you. You wrestle with their form of management, if it's X or Y procedure, you wrestle with it and you can't come to grips with it. And actually, it goes against all the grain of your ethics. Then if you can't stand in that position, it's time to demote yourself and walk out the door. Management has two forms, an X and a Y. You either are going to function as a full ethical human being that's prudent, or you're not. But you are tested when you're in a management capacity as to how you're going to handle your ethics along with the procedures of the union book. You have to stay within a guideline of what the union book is. So you are relevant and you're not outdated, and you're also following regulation. Now, let me go on to my guest. She's worked in a blue-collar capacity. She's also worked in a social work capacity. When you're counseling people, sometimes you have to have an extra set of eyes, preferably another insurance policy to protect yourself, because people can come back and accuse you of all irrational behavior, and it is their word against yours. Let's talk to Matt Harv about her experience with the students. Matt Harv, in the atmosphere, tell us a little bit about your experience at working at Tolleson High School.
At Tolleson High School, as I worked, my experience there was I was so enraged over it. Was a learning process mostly, because I worked with different people, and these people had different ideas about different things, and some of them was not following the rules. So as you said, we have some rules and regulations that we have to follow. And when you're dealing with a lot of people, and some of them don't want to follow the rules and some of them do, well, you have to stop and get organized with them and get them together so that you can go.
Sometimes you have to guide off the guideline a little bit, but you must follow the rules.
Matt Harv, as a counselor, were you aware at all times when your rights may have been violated, because you had to go into classrooms and provide services to these children? Did you find that your ratios were off, where you had too many children to counsel at times?
Times when I had too many children. And I know that that wasn't fair to me, but I endured it because I know that they couldn't do any better at the time.
Now, but you had rights, though, Matt Harv. You could have went into...
Yeah, I had rights. But sometimes you can have rights, but you can take those rights a little bit too far and make things difficult for you and everybody else.
Now, what I'm trying to correct out in the workforce is that, in regards to who you perturb or who you upset, you must exercise your right, because you do have the right to work in an environment that's conducive and healthy. But if that environment becomes toxic and tainted, you need to take it up with your administration. You don't take matters in your own hand, because there's a process, and you follow that process and constantly carry your handbook, your union handbook, with you, making sure you're following the procedures of properly correcting that problem. You're over.
Well, I've gotten relieved some many times when things didn't go like they should, and my authority of capacity was overpowered, you know. And then the boss stepped in and brought us all together and had a conference with us and found out that my rights wasn't being evaluated, and so she just parted off right there and then. And I didn't have to go to her. She came to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're having a little bit technical difficulties, and I don't seem to know. I'm going to have to talk to Blog Talk. They seem to be taking us off the air, and you're getting bits and pieces, and we apologize for that. So just bear with us. Matt Harv is still in the atmosphere. Now, our question to you again If you are finding that you have some difficulty about racial balances and not having enough counselors to assist you, what rights do you have? And what does your insurance secure that you will have for protection in the event that you come across a family member or a child that claims they're injured by your counseling? What do you do?
Well, I go to higher authority. I go to higher authority and turn it over to the authority and talk to the higher authority, let my higher authority know what's going on. And they will solve it.
Okay. Now, Medhar, sometimes they won't always solve it. You've got to make sure you get that handbook, follow through writing your grievance, because personnel won't write a grievance for you. They won't even check on a problem unless you present to them a grievance. And a grievance has to go forward, and it has to be properly channeled and written. If that doesn't happen, nobody is going to address your issue. Now, what grievance did you have the option of writing while on a job at any of your positions? Have you ever had to write a grievance? And what came of the outcome?
I didn't have to write a grievance ever.
In your many years of work, you never had to. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me share with you grievances that I've had to write. In the capacity of the school system, it is expected that teachers will be fluent in writing. So I've had to write several grievances pertaining to the help that needed to be received from counselors. Because I wasn't a counselor, I had to depend on my experts to come in the room to counsel the children. Periodically, we were absent of having our counselors because they were not paid. So some of them left the profession, and we had no counselors to work with our children, or the ratios were too high. So in the event that these children were not getting this therapy, which is written up in their IEP, which means that there's a violation, I am obligated by law to scribe in the records and write a grievance about not having proper consultation for the children who are in need of clinical counseling. I've written those up to the effect that management had to adhere to it immediately because those children this was prescribed for them in their lesson plan that they would get 1 hour of counseling that they were not getting. So, who gets mad at you? Administration does. They don't want you writing grievance. They don't want you inviting the outside in to examine them. But nevertheless, ladies and gentlemen, you have a right to write those grievances and appear at the meeting so you can stand behind your grievance and they can be careful to follow through to execute the grievance. What happens with a grievance? Sometimes a grievance takes for months to resolve, but nevertheless, you stand strong until that grievance is heard, and they'll give you a response back. Now, some of us work in atmospheres that are dangerous. Some of us work in capacities where our children don't even have enough books. Did you not know it is a right for that child, every child, to have their own personal book in the classroom? And if they don't, you can write a grievance, and you can grieve the fact that these children don't have proper materials. And because you're conducting class, you can continue to grieve the system and tell them you must provide books for these children. And because they're tax-paying citizens, they've paid for the right to have book rental, and they've paid money for book rental, so they should have books. Those are some of the things you can grieve. You can also grieve the security in the classroom. If there's a breach of contract where they tell you up front you're going to have security in your hallway, in your classroom, then they must have the security that you need in the event that a fight breaks out. You can grieve that so that you can say, I grieve the fact I have no security to protect me and the children in the event that a fight breaks out. Now, because I was a grieving sister, sometimes I found that people were very, very careful what they did in my presence and making sure that I had the necessary supplies and things, because you have to become a no-nonsense person, and you have to know your handbook, because you take the very book that they've written to secure you and protect you and the children, and you read it back to them and make them reinforce it. A good worker is going to do this, especially a manager that is responsible for a whole staff of people. You must make sure the environment is conducive for learning. And if it isn't, you grieve it. Now, what am I saying? Even in a workforce, when you're working in the capacity of a clerical worker, if there is a site in the area that is unprotected, asbestos, exposed, all of these things are supposed to be grieved and reported, because you are subjecting you and your staff to possibly inadequacies of becoming a health issue, which is OSHA. Then OSHA steps in and takes over, so you don't have to be an expert in everything. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here we are again. We've covered the blue-collar worker. Now we're talking about the boardroom, the executive. We talked about the unethical behavior of having an expense report and utilizing the money for personal assets. Now, ladies and gentlemen, more than likely, good managers and workers are admonished and they're recognized for their work. And the reason why I say this, even if you're volunteering, make sure that your volunteer work is followed by ethical reasoning and procedure, because people are still watching you when you volunteer. You know how I know? I volunteered in a capacity for 3 years. I was observed the whole time. And guess what? Somebody went to the senator and told them the good job I was doing. Then I got a call from the senator, Senator Feingold, telling me what a good job I had done for those 3 years. And I didn't even know somebody was watching me. It's good to have good work ethics. And it's good to be known as a hard worker. Some people won't like it because they will like to louse around, and they don't want you making them look bad because you're overworking this thing. Well, baby, work your thing. Work your thing like the songwriter says, Mary J. Wright. You got to work your thing, because you know what? There lies your opportunity for promotion when you have excelled in a capacity, followed procedure, and are a no-nonsense employer. They will notice you. And some will admonish you, and some will also give you the limelight to acknowledge your good work. Now, let's get back to our guest, Matt Hart. We want to ask Matt Hart to give us some viewpoints of some of the things that a good worker can do out there in the workforce. Matt Hart, you're in the atmosphere.
Yes, and what was the question that you said?
What are some of the things a good worker can do on a job and that they can be consistent with that will be observed by a superior?
My always assistant, a teacher who has many criteria. She has many things to do. And my volunteer, just go and assist her in what she's doing, and you will be awarded, because she will be glad you did that.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, Matt Harv has been covering a variety of areas, our blue-collar workers as well as our daycare workers and social workers. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about something different, some of the obscure jobs, difficult jobs, and hard jobs, sometimes that involve working in the hospital where your emotions are on the line at all times. And you're having to go in and make quick and fast decisions. You're working in the emergency room, and you have to make ethical decisions. And sometimes you're around doctors who might not be as ethical as you think and might do things that are inappropriate. How do you report that? Say, for example, you observe a doctor who made a mistake and they covered up for it and they didn't reveal it and the patient later on had a complication. How do you report that? I mean, do you get involved or do you look the other way? In the event that that patient goes up for an investigation, you possibly could be called to give your opinion about what happened. Now, oftentimes or not, there are a lot of accidents that happen in the hospital, and you have to be very conscious of what went on and document any accident and write it up, putting it in the notes so that the next note, the next nurse coming on will see what the prescribed orders are, what happened on that shift, and what may have gone wrong. It has to be written up. Now, it's up to the hospital administrator to investigate it, but you have to document it. You can't cover it up and hope that they won't come back to you. That's unethical. And we have to understand that you must act with prudency. If you see a young motorcycle man come in and there's a brand new doctor on staff who just got out of medical school, and there's a this is a trauma case. He decides he wants to open up the cavity of his chest so he can massage the heart. And you're watching this man open up the cavity, and the driver that came in from the accident didn't look like he could benefit from a massage heart. You've got to document this. You've got to write it up in a description that goes on the chart because you have license. And what your license say that the government or the state has a right to do is investigate you or pull your license if there was any unethical performance during that surgery. And if you have license, I don't care if you're not the doctor, your license can be pulled. Sometimes doctors want nurses to take the blame, and they don't want to be held accountable. Is that ethical? No, it's not. So you have to know your rights. You get the handbook and read it from front to cover, to cover to cover, till you know exactly what you can grieve so that you are protected. Now, let me go back to our guests. As I said, we're talking about having the right to go to work. And what rights do you have? The union rep wants to make sure you exercise your right. It helps your department to run well. You cannot be given a union rep book and never exercise your right. You have to follow that procedure. Now, for you executives out there who are working in a blue collar, who are working in a clerical position, that's salary. What about working overtime? Are you mandatory to work overtime if you're salaried? Yes, you are. And are you paid extra for it? No, you're not, because you're salaried. What does salary mean opposed to hourly? Salary is a professional job which you could be called on to work holidays and overtime, but you're given a check every month, irregardless if you're there or not. You don't dock like the hourly workers do. Hourly workers are only paid for the hours that they put in. Now, if you have a degree, should you be paid on an hourly basis? No. More than likely, you should be paid as an exempt worker who is a professional. And make sure you know that, because some people will get bamboozled and brought in under hourly wages and be a professional exempt employee with the capabilities of exemption because they have a degree. Now, you must remember, corporations will tell you that salaries are posted online, and because you have a degree, you are required to obtain X amount of dollars. Most teacher salaries are posted online, and you can see what we make. and it's an open book. Now, let me go back to my expert, Matt Harv, and we're going to get ready to sum this up and bring some closure. We're going to let Matt Harv give us a summary of a good ethical worker. What must we do to remain good ethical workers, Matt Harv?
Well, I was going to ask you to answer that for us. I'd like to know what your opinion is about that.
Well, Matt Harv, it just happened that you were our guest today and the expert, so we're going to pose that question to you and let you have the last few words on the topic.
Well, my opinion on that is that when you working with a group of people, or maybe say ladies, for instance, and you have any problems come up, you should first be able to sit down and talk about your problems so that you can get them together. If not, then you get your representative there, and you all can come together because you don't want to go overboard. You want to stay as a group, and you want to stay as a friendly organization among.
Thank you so much, Matt Harv. Now, there you have it. Matt Harv gave you a summary of what a good ethical worker would do on a job. We want to thank Matt Harv for giving her input and her many years of service in the capacity of a counselor, as well as a child care worker, and her 7 years in working as a blue-collar worker at the Inland Steel here in in East Chicago, Indiana, and showing us how women can break into the field of blue-collar workers and getting the right respect that they deserve. Ladies and gentlemen, you do have the right to employment. And if you're ever in any area where you're not given that right, you need to put together legislature that will allow you to go and submit letters to your legislature, as well as to talk with your congressman about the rights to work. There is a way to lobby for jobs to make sure there are jobs available for people to work. It is honest living and ethical for black women to find employment among men, for Caucasian workers to allow African Americans to enter into fields that they were once not allowed. Now you're seeing things open up as people are learning to become a pilot and they're flying. At one point, blacks were not allowed to fly and get their license. Now, you didn't see the porters at one time, and now black porters were able to get their training and become a porter. There are some fields that blacks are still locked out, and they must remember the way you get around this problem is to follow procedure and getting someone to look at the problem so they can reassess it. You don't want to become overpowered and create a fuss on a job. While you're working, you proceed on with the process of following the proper channels and chain of command, but continuing to work in that capacity. Now, we're changing. Society is changing. Young women are involving themselves in the STEMS program, science, technology, engineering, and math. What does that mean? That means we're going to have more biomedicines that are female, more women that are engineers that are female, and their pre-college program to help usher them in. Mothers, you're going to have to get your young women prepared through Girl Scouts to get involved in the NASA programs, get involved in the after-school science program for a mission to Mars, to get them acclimated to technical areas of employment so that we can break the color line and the gender line for women who want to cross over into male-dominant positions. It's very important that you understand that you have a right to employment, females. And males, you have a right to treat these women with dignity, to allow them, to usher them in to those areas that are hard to fill. Teachers, there is a shortage, even though you see teachers being laid off in some capacities of education, such as early childhood intervention, early childhood, there is a shortage. There is scholarship money laid aside to assist you so that you can return to school in these shortage capacities. Work is available, ladies and gentlemen. And if you're coming off of a medical leave and you've been sick and you want to go back in the workforce, you have the right, even if you're disabled, you have the right to go back and try to go to work full time on a trial basis. I had to do that. I know that sometimes your physical body won't allow it, but you can work part-time. And if need be, pick up two part-time jobs until you find what you're capable of working around. But one thing you must know, if your doctor ordered you to be on a medical release based on your disability, make sure you follow it. If you're not supposed to be standing for long hours, follow that. If you're not supposed to be sitting for long hours, follow that also. But know your rights. And the way you know your rights is that when you're hired and you go through orientation, ask for the handbook for personnel or the union rep handbook. Now, what happened for those of you who are on unemployment? You still have some rights, too. You can work part-time and still receive a portion of your unemployment as long as you don't go over that required amount. You have a right to go for training. You have a right to train in other new fields. And if you're a displaced worker, you have the right to go back to school under the understanding that there's funds to pay for it. But you also have a right, if you're underpaid or overpaid, after they discover that you are no longer eligible for it, you have the right to appeal that. And if they take your state taxes with an interception letter, you have a right to appeal that, because if you've fallen below the level of a refugee and you're indigent, you can request that money back from the state. And you can tell them, based on your financial stage, why you think you should get that money back if they've intercepted your state dollars. You can appeal it. You can appeal any decision not to give you your unemployment, but it must be timely because they can reject it based on timeliness. There's a lot going on where the state is holding a lot of people accountable for monies that they've given them. Now they want them back. So they go and issue you a letter saying you owe them. If you're having that problem, go to your unemployment office and let them know that you applied and you were eligible. Now, if they renewed your eligibility on an extension, stay in their faces and let them know that you have rights to go to the unemployment workforce department and apply for new jobs if you've been displaced. But you have rights, ladies and gentlemen, and you got to exercise them. The sweat of your brows, you have a right to work unto that sweat of your brows. Work is ethical, and it's honorable, and everybody should have a right to work, be if you're homosexuals, heterosexuals, be if you're disabled, underemployable, displaced. You have a right to work. And know that, ladies and gentlemen. Go in these human resource department and find out what your benefits are. Find out what your benefits are and calculate them. They are the same sum total as money. And sometimes you may be paid a low hourly rate, but you may be given benefits to compensate for that loss. And men, don't jump up and quit. If you find a woman's been promoted over you and you're working a good professional job and you're close to retirement, don't jump up and quit because you got a thing about working up on a woman. Work the doggone job. Learn the job. Teach her the job. Stay on the job. It's far more important now to stay on a job so you can get to that level of retirement. Because things are so bad now, people are not guaranteed their Social Security or their retirement. So stay on the job as long as you can. And for those of you who are entrepreneurs and want to make yours a million, go online and Google the job opportunity for working as entrepreneurs and making yours a million. There are organizations that want to make your company $1 million business. And you know how Omi feels about that filthy lucre? My next move is to get with Make Mine a Million so that my next business, not non-for-profit where I'm volunteering, my next LLC or C-Corp is going to be Make Mine a Million. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been a grand to work with. And Mrs. Harvey, we want to thank you for your input and welcome you back again at any time. You're welcome, dear. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, our train is waiting, and we got to get on that train. Come on. I'm going to bring you down.
Let's get out of here.
Now you see me, now you don't. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my prayer and decree that all men and women present here today that would like to work under the sweat of their brows, or maybe even work smart and not hard, I decree that you find employment and that employment is waiting for you in the wing. I decree that there is somewhere you can exert energy that is honorable, respectable, and ethical. I decree that every woman who's in a boardroom will know that she has to be very careful of how she conducts herself at all times in a ladylike fashion, and that no time will she bring shame onto her position and her character. It is very important, men, that you learn to allow the women to lead and allow yourself to follow at times when you find the woman is a bigger man. It's very important, ladies and gentlemen, that young boys and girls learn the ethical way of working at an early age so that they can set their character in motion. And at all times, do not do anything that will take away from your morals and character on these jobs. Just to keep a job, for all of you entertainers, stop showing everything you got to keep employment. Women, put your skirt tails down and stop shaking it down on these discotheque shows. Find a respectable way to earn money and don't be so quick to be on the entertainment end of it, showing your behind, because people are going to remember you by what you reveal on these airways. It's important that we bring honor and respect to our family. Work is honorable. Say it with me. Work is honorable. Work is honorable, just like knowledge is power. I want to throw my fist in the air and give out three shouts to Harambe Radio Station. I say Harambe, Harambe, Harambe. Baba Booey to you, y'all. Stay tuned for Tuesday. We'll be back at you at 10:30 p.m. in the atmosphere. Meet us there. Don't beat us there. Oh, double!